And welcome to the first ever Three Man Weave podcast. My name is Brian Ford. I am the senior editor of the Pick and Pop Basketball Diaries. For those of you who don't know, we started this blog a couple months ago, and a podcast was always something that we wanted to include on it. It kind of makes more sense with the times. People don't like to read anymore. You just want something to listen to. So for those who do like to read, you can check out our website at pickandpopdiaries.blogspot.com. In the near future, we're going to be taking off that blogspot, getting ourselves our own website. But for now, you can check out all our stuff there. We have everything from divisional roundups to power rankings to talking about some other stuff. And then some fun little YouTube videos. I know there was one of basketball playing dog earlier this morning. But to my left and my right are our two senior bloggers, Evan and Andy. How are you guys doing this morning?
Good. Great. Thanks for having us, man.
Good, good. So we're gonna start doing a podcast weekly. And basically what we're going to do is kind of review what we talked about throughout the week. We're going to go through each division. Between the three of us, we each took on two divisions this year to kind of, you know, review, talk about what's hot, which teams are cold, things that are happening. We, of course, like any other males did, we did a fantasy draft to decide on our divisions. So we're going to start by going through those, and we'll start out east with the Atlantic. So, Andy, if you want to take on the Atlantic.
Sure, Brian. When we're talking about the Atlantic, you obviously have to start with the Eastern Conference best team, and that's the New York Knicks, who are having a phenomenal start to the year, and it all starts with their MVP, so small forward, Carmelo Anthony. Right now, he's my vote for MVP, and he's had a remarkable increase in offensive efficiency this year. In previous years, I would have called him a volume shooter, and I had killed him for probably the previous 7 or 8 years of his career once he was a veteran player. But this year, I can't do that. He's really found his niche, and the Knicks are doing a great job of finding complementary players to surround him with. They've got shooters at pretty much every position, whether it's Rasheed Wallace as backup center. They've got Steve Novak on the wing, Novocaine. And J.R. Smith, Jason Kidd is shooting over 50%, right around 48% from three-point land. And what you do when you surround a player like that with three-point shooters is it makes it difficult for other teams to double cover. So right now we're seeing the Knicks being able to play a really good one-on-one game with Carmelo, and when teams force a double team on him, they're getting good shots from one of the people on the wing.
Yeah, two things I really like. I think J.R. Smith's play has just improved vastly this year. I think in the past he's, for good reason, has had the stereotype of, I love every shot I'm going to take. I'm going to take every shot no matter what. Yeah, and he still loves them, and there are still some questionable decisions that he makes. There's some good sideline face gifs that you can see from the Knicks bench in reaction to J.R. Smith's shots. But, yeah, I mean, the fact that he's one of the guys moving the ball around the perimeter, it just kind of shows you what a veteran presence can do on that team. And then the other thing is that lineup where they throw out Tyson Chandler and four shooters, and they're just like, Tyson, get an offensive rebound, and we'll take another shot. I mean, they're shooting threes at a historic rate right now, but they're also making them at pretty much a historic rate.
Over 29 threes a game.
Yeah, and it's just, it's freakish. I mean, the way they're playing right now, it's a different brand of basketball than we've ever seen out of the Knicks. And it's honestly a blast to watch. As a fan, you love it. As a Celtics fan, I don't like it. I'm hoping they come down a little bit of earth by the next time they play Boston. But, yeah, they're playing out of their minds, and a lot of it has to do with Carmelo kind of taking that next step. The biggest thing is what happens when Amari comes back, and that's kind of what everyone's talking about.
If you look at Carmelo this year and last year, when the Knicks started to take off, it's when they moved him to the four, playing as an undersized stretch four, and he's really been a matchup nightmare for any team they played against and really taken off from that point because none of the fours can guard him. It forces other teams to play small and plays into the Knicks' hands.
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I mean, Carmelo's just doing phenomenal things this year. But for me, I think the biggest difference I see in the Knicks is the stability in the second unit led by Jason Kidd. He comes into the game, and this team does not miss a beat. It's pretty remarkable. Kidd's shooting 48% from downtown this year to start of the year. He's leads the team in steals. There's just an energy level and a poise with that second unit, and I believe it all starts with Jason Kidd. And, of course, you have Rasheed Wallace. It's really fun just to see the second unit succeed the way they are. A lot of offense, a lot of scoring. And then, you know, you look at this team, talk about Tyson Chandler. He hardly misses a shot. He's shooting 72% on the year. You know, Novak's 45% from downtown. Pretty much they can get, as you mentioned, they can pretty much get an entire lineup of shooters out there mixed with Tyson Chandler, who's a rebound hawk, averaging almost 10 boards a game. And this team's really been dominant. And looking up at them in the standings, we're seeing the Brooklyn Nets 5 games back. And quite frankly, the Nets are a really good team at the very top. They're a top-heavy team. But I don't believe they're going to have the depth to match with New York or Boston for the entire season. Deron Williams off to just a horrible start to the year, despite the Nets still being a pretty good team, 13-10 to start. Deron Williams is shooting, I believe, sub 40%, 38.8% to start the year.
Yeah, I mean, the Nets, it's been exciting. The whole thing coming back to Brooklyn or coming to Brooklyn and Brooklyn getting a sports team again. But like you said, their lack of depth, I think it's scary come playoff time. They have some great guys there in terms that are playoff tested or are playoff type basketball players. When you look at someone like Jarrett Wallace, he's the prototype of something you always see on a championship team, a lockdown defender who can also create his own offense in certain situations. Joe Johnson's been pretty underwhelming too. I know as of last week, both him and Williams were right around 16 points a game. That might have gone up and gone down a little bit, but they were expecting more like 20 and 20 from those guys, and they're just not getting that from night to night. And they've had a pretty tough schedule, so I'll give them that. They've been playing a lot of marquee games, and they've been playing a lot of marquee games on the road, too. It'll be interesting. You know, they go to the Garden next week, so that'll be a fun game, you know, battling New York again. But, you know, I think right now they're one of those teams that is going to be a really good regular season team, and I think they may struggle in the playoffs a little bit. It is a new core, and I think they need another year to get to know each other.
I totally agree with that. You know, for me, I'm looking at it, and I'm seeing, you know, Brook Lopez's recent injury, obviously. He'll be back soon, but that injury hurts him a lot. You know, the big fellow's a really great offensive player, despite his rebounding woes and defensive issues in general. But without him, I see this team being real tied up on offense going forward, forcing a lot of long jump shots.
I like what they're doing in the trenches, because they have Reggie Evans, and this team has taken on a new his personality, which is tough, bang you down low, make sure that there are no easy buckets. And they're playing the physical brand of basketball that kind of the Celtics were known for in the past. I know in the game they played against the Celtics earlier, they kind of physically took it to the Celtics, which no one has done in a long time. So they kind of impressed me with the new personality of this team to go along with the new arena and everything.
Speaking of a team with a new personality, also looking up at the Knicks in the division, the 76ers, six games back. And this team's really trying to take on the personality of its rising star point guard, Drew Holiday. A real up-and-down team. They have Thaddeus Young on the wing, who's been playing great this year. And Brian, as we were talking before the podcast, he's setting career highs in points, rebounds, blocks, steals. I mean, you name it, this guy's showing great improvement across the board. Evan Turner's finally coming into his own. He leads the team in rebounds from the shooting guard position. You know, he really goes after the ball, both in the offensive and defensive glass. He can handle the rock and distribute for his teammates. The one thing that this team's missing is it's really missing the height because of the main story with that team, and that's the injury to Andrew Bynum.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they built that team to be around Bynum. You look at it, it's just a bunch of athletic guys who none of them really do one thing great. They just do a bunch of good things, and that's what you want around kind of a center like Bynum who you can play inside, outside with, and he's just not there. I mean, his hair has made more appearances this year in you know, box scores than he has. And it's just he is one of those players who I think it's a little scary because he's definitely got an attitude problem. I mean, that's not even a secret anymore. You know, you look at the comparison between a guy like him and a guy like Derrick Rose, both coming back from injuries. Derrick Rose supposedly is going to the gym 2-3 times a day, 6 days a week, and on that off day, he's watching film about how he can get better and how he can stay safe. Andrew Bynum is playing Papa Shot, and he's going bowling. I mean, it just shows you the work ethic that Bynum currently has. And while he's a younger guy, I mean, this is still like his sixth or seventh year in the league, and you played along a guy like Kobe, you have to understand that this is your job. You have to be a professional here, and what he's doing is scary, and even scarier is his contract's up after this year. He could easily leave if he wants to.
And there's a long history of big men with knee problems, you know, going back from Walton, of course, more recently Greg Oden, so it could be a lingering problem for the future.
And regardless of how he plays or how long he's injured this year, he's going to get paid next year, because if you look at the contracts that they're handing out to big men, it's like, as long as you're huge, you're going to get a contract.
Man's got sky-high potential, that's for sure.
Yeah, it's true. He showed it last year, but he hasn't lived up to it so far.
I think the other story in this Atlantic Division, besides the New York Knicks' absolute dominance, is the Boston Celtics' lack of dominance. You really expected it's obviously upsetting for us three Celtic fans. But just in general, you know, it's the lack of energy on the defensive end. It's the lack of execution on defense. It's really upsetting after seeing such a great job done since Kevin Garnett was acquired for the 2007-2008 season. We're just not seeing it this year. You know, the second unit obviously has a lot of great players that are yet to quite gel, and there is definitely a period of time it takes to get used to the Doc Rivers defensive rotations. They're very unique the way we play the pick and roll in our rotations, but so far it's been quite poor.
I have high hopes for them in the future because they're running a defense that is much different than the defense that they have run throughout Doc Rivers' entire tenure. They're running a smaller defense in which they're switching on everything in the pick and rolls, which means it's going to take longer for everyone to learn every position, because if you're switching on every position, you need to know the rotations 1 through 5, and everyone needs to know them. So I'm hoping that the cohesion will grow as the season gets along because they're running this difficult defense, and eventually the finished product will be just as good a defense as they had back in the glory days.
I think Doc's still trying to find out who's finishing five is, too. You're seeing a lot of different lineups out there in crunch time. Definitely. Obviously, Rondo, Pierce, and Garnett are going to be out there. But, you know, Jeff Green is a guy who can give you 20 one night and then could give you 8 the next night. And you just don't know where that 20 guy is going to come up and where that 8 guy is going to show up.
Jason Terry says he wants him to get mean.
He wants him to get mean. Jason Terry is, he's just not shooting the ball well right now. And I still believe in him, and I still believe in that signing. I think he's trying to be a little bit too much like Ray Allen, trying to be a spot-up shooter, and really he's not. He's a guy who can create his own shot. You see him do that one dribble pop-up, and he hasn't been doing that. He's been taking shots. He seems like he's rushing. Brandon Bass was one of those guys who was in the Final Five last year, and he honestly just hasn't been impressive at all this year.
Bass has been really disappointing for me. And quite frankly, if he's not playing up to the level that he's capable of, we need to put Jared Sullinger in the game. Sullinger has a great mid-range jump shot right now, and what he really adds to this team is offensive rebounding.
I think once Avery Bradley comes back, this team's totally different. Their rotation is different. Their defense intensity is different. I think one of the things, and I was talking about this with someone the other night, is when their defense is lacking because there's no real sense of urgency. And this is what my friend was telling me, is he said when Avery Bradley gets on the ball and the rest of the team sees Bradley's locking this guy up inside their own free throw line, all right, let's move ahead, let's get some urgency. There's really no sense there. They're picking up guys at half court, and Rondo's a good defender in the sense that he can take a lot of chances and he's quick, but he's not a lockdown defender. Rondo's much better playing on the off-ball guy. He's gonna guard every shooting guard that we face, minus Dwayne Wade. Bradley will obviously face and cover Dwayne Wade. But he just changes the role, and for a guy who 2 years ago was a bench guy, no one thought about it. It's a great thing about Bradley, but we just need him to stay healthy. And it's a little concern. Two shoulder surgeries, that's a little bit of a concern.
It's about 3 weeks away.
For those of you that haven't watched a ton of Celtics basketball, he is probably one of the best on the ball defenders in the league. Him fighting over screens and fighting through screens is unparalleled. There are YouTube videos of turnovers he has forced in the pick and roll, and it's turnovers plural. It's a lot of them.
Yeah, I mean, what he does is that type of defense, that type of intensity on defense, leads to a lot of transition buckets in offense, which the Celtics really need to do to be able to utilize the speed of Jeff Green and Jason Terry and Rajon Rondo. And, you know, we'll talk more about the Celtics in depth as the season goes on. And, you know, with the Atlantic Division, there really seems no point in covering the Toronto Raptors too much. This team's struggling from top to bottom. They do have, you know, a solid point guard in Jose Calderon. He puts up low turnover numbers. He shoots a good percentage. But quite frankly, he just doesn't quite bring a lot of energy to the offense that they
once,
have.
Once Lowry's back, that'll help them.
He's been in and out of games so much this year. And, I mean, even Bargnani doesn't like him. So.
It's true. I'm actually starting to see a little improvement from Ed Davis, their power forward this year, which has been fun.
Yeah, Tom Haberstroh wrote an article on ESPN a couple of days ago about 5 guys that deserve another shot in a bad area, that have been in a bad area, excuse me. Varejao was on that list, J.J. Redick, and Ed Davis was another one of those guys who just isn't getting the minutes in Toronto, but he's shown real flashes of stuff that could be good for a contender as a backup guy, backup big man to come in and grab some boards. He's another guy who doesn't need an offense run for him. He can just get points his own way. So.
That's true. This team's going to need a lot of development over the offseason from Jonas Valanciunas to really get where they want to go and be competitive in this highly competitive Atlantic Division.
All right, that's enough for the Atlantic. Evan, how about you take us on into the Central? And I know not as much to talk about in here, not as exciting with no D-Rose there, but yeah, how about you lead us through?
It's just a division of disappointment in general. Chicago's been about as good as you can expect. They're playing excellent defense even without their star player. People have mentioned Noah as a defensive MVP candidate. Player of the Year candidate. But it's all the other teams just not interesting. Like, Milwaukee is... You watch them and you just... You hope that Jennings and Ellis will just stop jacking up shots at some point and they'll spread the ball around. Other than... I really like Larry Sanders, who statistically is the best defender in the league, according to his defensive rating per 100 possessions. So that's pretty interesting to see his development there. But otherwise, it's just not that enjoyable of a team in Milwaukee. Indiana has really underperformed.
Roy Hibbert, where's he been this year? He got the big contract in the offseason, and you know, right now he's averaging 9.7 points a game. I mean, I expect at least 15 and 9 at least from him at this
point. And that's with Granger out. Yeah. So it's not like they're cutting into his shots from last year. It's just he's not playing as well.
One real quick thing on him is I forget who said it. It might have been Bill Simmons on the BS report. He said that there are certain guys in the league that get that contract and they take the next step. And it all comes down to their attitude, is their work ethic. And it's, all right, am I going to be the guy who gets that contract and then proves himself worthy of that contract? Or am I going to be the guy that says, I got that contract because I already proved myself and now I can take a break? And Roy Hibbert might be one of those, you know, guys in the ladder who just thinks, all right, I got the money. You know, let's let the good times roll. And hopefully not, because he's a cornerstone of that Pacers team, and they are quickly falling into Atlanta Hawks land where they are just one of those good teams who's going to be a second-round exit every year.
Not to make excuses for him, but he got a lot of points on the break just because he was, even though he's not that agile, he would get down the court as fast as he could, and players would have to guard Granger on the wing so that it would free up space for him, where now he's not having as much room to operate.
He's not even the only person underperforming on that team. You got George Hill shooting 40%. You have Paul George shooting 42%. I expected Paul George to make a huge jump this year, especially with Granger out, and so far he's been disappointing. You know, he's obviously a great shooter. We know that. He can knock down threes, but he's got to be able to get to the bucket, get to the foul line at a much higher rate than he is.
That being said, they are still one of the top, statistically, one of the top rebounding and defensive teams in the league, which usually will translate to wins. So if they can find a way to score a little bit more, maybe a little bit more out of the point guard spot or the two spot, then maybe they can kick it into another gear. I still expect big things from this team. They just haven't shown it to us yet.
Yeah, team's currently shooting 41% against Indiana, which is currently best in the league for holding opponents to field goal percentage. Chicago, who we just talked about, is second in the league in that at 42%. So some good defensive teams in there. But how about our lovely Pistons and Cleveland Cavaliers a couple weeks ago? I wrote an article about how the Pistons weren't going to win, and then they ran off a couple games. So I think I'm going to write one of those for the Celtics soon, see if it works. But how about those the Cavs and the Pistons?
I mean, the Pistons are a lot better than they showed to start a season. They're probably about a 500 team. They have a lot of solid building blocks, especially in Monroe and Drummond, even though people kill him and he looks like he's completely never played basketball before on the offensive end. On defense, he's putting up some of the best numbers on the team and the best defensive numbers of almost any rookie in the league. So, like, if you look at him, he'll eventually be a very good NBA player. It's just going to take some time for him.
Brandon Knight, of course. I mean, the young point guard there. We've seen an incredible improvement in his shooting ability from last year. I wasn't sure if he was going to be able to knock down shots in the NBA. Last year, he shot 41%. This year, he's only at 43%. But his three-point field goal percentage has skyrocketed near 45% this year. So that's really good to see out of a young player. You know, this team does, as you said, has some building blocks for the future. I'm pretty excited to see where they are a few years from now.
What's really hurting them a lot is Stuckey had a breakout year last year. Rodney Stuckey had a breakout year last year. And now he's just not hitting shots. And if you're kind of a two-guard that your thing is getting to the hole and scoring, you're supposed to be instant offense off the bench. If you can't score, you pretty much amount to being useless. So yeah, they need him to pick it up if they're going to continue to make a run and get better. Cleveland has been pretty bad this year, but
despite the efforts of Arizon Bergeron in the NBA and rebounding with near 15 a game,
he's on an All-Star this year. I mean, I don't really believe in the All-Star game anyway, but he will get voted in by the coaches. I think sometimes record matters, but yeah, he's a 15-15 guy right now, and he's going to be one of the biggest trade commodities. But what about the
They really miss Kyrie Irving. It was him being out has really hurt them because they just haven't had someone to score. And despite, and also not just that, they've, even when he has been in, their defense has looked disjointed, which you would expect from a team filled with young players, because they only have one sturdy defender who they can count on to always be in the right spot. Now they're playing a lot of out of position. They do create a lot of turnovers on the defensive end, but they're having a problem contesting all the shots, and that's a hallmark of a team that is not playing good team defense, because they're young, where you're not trusting in your teammates to be in the right spot, as opposed to, so you try harder to create turnovers in order to get stops, when if you trusted your teammates, you might get better stops. And you'll hear more about that when I'm talking about another team coming up.
Definitely.
Another rookie to watch on that team is Deion Waiters. This man can score inside and out, but right now he's just taking too many fadeaway jumpers, too many 18, 20 footers, and I think, I don't know his exact stats, he's shooting, I think, about 35% from the field, 36% right now. It's been ugly.
And that's really the only thing he does to a score, so if you're not doing that well, what are you to your team?
Who's in more NBA shock, Austin Rivers or Deion Waiters right now in his NBA defenders?
It's hurt his development that Kyrie has been out, because he needed to come in and have someone who would give him the ball in good spots. Where with Kyrie out, they're like, all right, well, we'll give Waiters the ball and let him do his thing, which is not what you want to tell him early on in his career, because you'll set up bad habits where he's taking terrible shots for his entire career.
Yeah, exactly, especially on a bad team too. Moving on to the Southeast. Okay. So when looking at the Southeast, obviously Miami from the top, defending champs. Yeah, exactly. This team, there's no way around it. They're going to be in it when it's important. I still think
they're in the Eastern Conference Finals.
It's a lock that they're making at least the Conference Finals. You could almost say it's a lock that they're making the NBA Finals if they can figure out how to beat the Knicks. The Knicks are really their only competition right now if you look at it. But this team does have some problems when you look at some of those Western Conference teams, and I kind of hinted on it when I wrote my Southeast wrap up this week. They are currently second to last in the league in rebounds per game. They're getting about 39 a game, which is just really low for a team that is 15-6. And they also are 17th in the league in points allowed. They do give up a lot of points to teams. And when you look on the Western Conference side and you see the Grizzlies with two big men, if the Lakers, and we'll talk about it a little more, if they can ever, you know, figure out what they're doing with all their big men, you know, the Thunder with big men, San Antonio. These are teams that are going to give the Heat problems. So while they're, you know, running train through the East right now, and they have the benefit of being in a really bad division, so they're going to lock up a top three seed with that division crown. They're probably going to be two at worst going into the Eastern playoffs. There's still some situations there.
And despite all the criticism Dwayne Wade's received so far this year, I think he's playing all right. I think he's still shooting about 50%. Yeah. And, Charles Barkley's earned the right to say what he wants to say, but, LeBron was actually probably right telling him to shut up.
And maybe I haven't earned the right to say what I want to say, but I was one of those guys who criticized Dwayne Wade last week. When it comes down to it is I just think there's just been such a regression, and I think part of it is how Dwayne Wade plays his game. Is he is one of those guys that takes 8 to 10 hard hits a game, and I think it's just starting to wear down.
He's not a great shooter.
You look at all the great players, they made adjustments. You know, Kobe made adjustments to his game. MJ made adjustments to his game. Larry Bird made adjustments to his game as his back started to give out. And I think Dwayne Wade is at that part of his career where this upcoming summer, he needs to really work on that outside jumper, work on that three-pointer. He's a career 29% shooter from three.
I'll give him three.
Teams play off him, and you can't have one of your superstars being played off of in your offense. LeBron's amazing, but he can't take five guys. He can on certain possessions, but he can't a whole game. To me,
their problem is defense. Yeah. Last year, they hung their hat on defense, and they won with defense, as they were statistically through the season the best defense in the league. This year, they're not. They're trying to score. They're trying to win by outscoring other teams. They're not playing the staunch defense that they played last year, and I expect them to turn it on later in the year. But if they don't, I think they could get upset in an earlier round, which I know would be a shock and is probably not likely.
But. Yeah, and I talked about it yesterday in the column that they have a lot of tradable contracts. James Jones is not part of the rotation now that Ray Allen's a member of the team. Joel Anthony is tradable. There are some 1 year, 2 year contracts. Norris Cole, well, he's a great rookie. He's someone that a worse team would take on. And I brought up a trade in my lovely trade machine time yesterday that they could get Gortat back from the Suns. Gortat has openly said he does not like playing for Alvin Gentry. He wants to play on a contender, and he's going to be a big man that I think a lot of teams are going to be coveting around the trade deadline. And I think the Heat, they need a big man like that. They need a big man who doesn't need offense created for him, that he can just get points off the boards. Because they're playing, you know, you can ask Chris Bosh to play center for 2 weeks. You can't ask Chris Bosh to play center for the whole year. But going along, we can talk about Miami forever. The Hawks are kind of really the only other intriguing story in this division. You know, they're 14-7 right now. Obviously took a little bit of a step back with the loss to Miami this past Monday. That would have been a nice statement win. But this team, they currently are top 10 in terms of strength of schedule. And NBA RPI are in seven. And they have really impressed with a lineup that, you know, is just a bunch of guys. They just brought a bunch of veterans in, and let's just see if this works. You know, Korver's injured right now, but he's been playing well for them. Devin Harris is a veteran point guard who's never going to do anything amazing, but he does everything well. He doesn't do anything, you know, great. Josh Smith is having a good year, but he's still one of the most tradable contracts in the NBA right now. You know, he's on that one-year deal. He's got one more year left in his deal, and it's kind of obvious he doesn't want to be in Atlanta necessarily. So don't be surprised if this starts to go the wayside, that he may be one of those guys on the trading block. Al Horford's Al Horford.
He's the best player, in my opinion. I love what Al Horford does on a game-to-game basis. Hits the glass hard. He can score in a variety of ways. And, you know, with him and Josh Smith playing inside, it's very disruptive for teams to get into the paint.
Yeah, I still think they can use one more big man. Their depth at the biggest questionable, and Horford has shown a little bit of injury prone in the past couple of years. If they get dinged up again, what's unfortunate is I still think this team isn't good enough to make another jump, and I just still see them getting a 4 or 5 seed. I think their ceiling is probably the 3, where they're kind of right around right now, and a second round exit.
I really like Lou Williams. He's come in and been everything that Jamal Crawford was a few years back, where they have just an igniter off the bench who can come in and score buckets for them. And he's just been almost probably a better fit than Joe Johnson is. So he's making the Joe Johnson trade, where they just essentially gave him up for cap space, seem like kind of a good idea.
He's been an inefficient scorer. You know, he's only shooting about 43% right now, but his energy is incredible. Yeah. He gets them out on the break, he gets them running, and he's a person who can both hand the ball and play off the rock. So, you know, when you have a player like that on the floor, it's very valuable.
Yeah, definitely. Next, the Magic, I've said it multiple times in my posts. They're currently at 10-13. This team needs to bottom out. I mean, they lost White. They need to bottom out. They have some awful contracts when you look at their roster. I said it last night. Why do you re-sign a 32-year-old point guard, or however old Jameer Nelson is? He looks like he's 32 with the way he plays sometimes. I mean, yeah, he had a great year in his All-Star year. But why pay a guy that old when you know you're in rebuilding mode for that long? Fall is locked up for 4 years. Big Baby Davis is locked up for another
Davis
3.
Contract,
I mean,
is far too
Big
bad.
Baby Davis
he's playing well, though.
He is
yeah,
playing well.
But at times he thinks he's Kevin Garnett, and he takes way too many shots a game for what he should be doing for that team. And I think they just need to bottom out. They're in that. They're starting to fall in that no man's land where they're never going
to
be good enough.
Worst
to make
spot
the playoffs.
To be in the NBA. Worst
yeah.
spot.
They're going to be a perennial, you know, 9-10. Best ceiling, maybe a 7 or 8 seed, and then you lose to the Heat in the first round. They're not in a spot where it's good long-term for them. There are some good young pieces there. Andrew Nicholson has played really well ever since they've gotten him more minutes. It seems like they're consistently doing that. Etuan Moore has played pretty well when they've given him minutes. You know, they have some interesting decisions to make, too. Yeah, Vucevic. They have an interesting decision to make with J.J. Redick this year. His contract is up. Whether you want to keep, you know, good clubhouse guy, as they talk about, good locker room guy. But is he really worth bringing back when you're essentially bringing back an all right defender? He can't lock anyone down, really, and he's really known for his 3-point shooting. You know, those guys, well, they're not as big as some others. They kind of are a dime a dozen. Like, you can find another guy who can shoot threes. Maybe not as well as Redick, but you can find another guy for a cheap contract.
He's also a lot more valuable to a elite team who can come in, and he can come in and be a cog in a championship team as opposed to being the second best player. And you don't want to pay him as the second.
Yeah, exactly.
I think they're also hoping that as they go forward, you know, a player like Mo Harkless makes a Gerald Wallace type jump in his second year and really can use that elite athleticism that he has to, you know, get offensive rebounds and help the team.
He's only 19, so yes, the sky's the limit for him.
Absolutely, yeah. I agree.
And then the other two teams in this division are lovely Charlotte Bobcats, who I praised through the roof when they were 7-5. They have since gone on to lose 11 straight. So that should pretty much sum it up for you. I wrote yesterday before last night's game, and including last night's game, actually, looking, they lost 107-98. They've only scored 100 points twice in those 11 games, one of those being an overtime game. This team just can't score the ball. They almost need Kemba to score 30 a game to even have any shot to win, and he scored 32 last night, and they still lost by 9. So that pretty much sums it up. This team's just really, they're just too young. They need a couple more years. And they also, I think they just need to pick a core and go with it. They've been doing some addition and subtraction these last couple years and then say, okay, this is our core. And then they trade a couple guys in and they bring a couple veterans in. They need to pick a core and go with it and start to build off of that, because otherwise they're just going to stay in this awful, awful no man's land where they're just going to be this team that literally people just pick on for the fun of it because it's easy to. Side note, their basketball court also is hideous.
I think
it looks like an Arena Football League field or like something you'd see in the WNBA. Whether they're trying to go 90s retro, like, sure, maybe it works then, but then they should have come out with that. So
I know I often hark on this when I talk about NBA players, but this is probably the least efficient offense, as you mentioned, the NBA. Their center, Byron Mullins, is shooting 38% from the field. That's a center. Obviously, this man shoots a lot of threes, but yeah, still. That's just horrible. Their best player right now, I mean, obviously, Kemba's scoring. MKG, Michael Kidd-Gilchrist, has been playing at a really good level. I mean, he's shooting 50% from downtown. Obviously, he's only taken, I think, 2, so that's actually probably not going to bring it up. But he's shooting 48% from the field. And that's what I'm saying. From a rookie, that's nice
great
to see.
Defense,
but it's getting... He's surrounded by a bunch of players that just can't score with efficiency.
Yeah, they need to go on a little bit of run, give their fans some hope. And who knows, in 2 seasons, they could be the Hornets, supposedly. So that would be pretty nice to get those teal uniforms back. And then I'm not even going to go to the Wizards. They're 3-18. They're awful. Until John Wall comes back, you can't even properly grade this team because he is their stud. He's got 2 years, I think it is, left on his current deal. They need to do something to prove that he's worth, you know, that it's worth for him to stick around.
We haven't heard any locker room issues so far. So that's okay.
What about the news that they were saying that they had the James Harden deal on the table for Bradley Beal and I think it was Ariza in part of the deal, and they turned it down because the owner didn't want to pay.
Yeah.
What does that say to your fans that you're not willing to... It's like it made them look really stupid.
Yeah, and there's a little bit of... It's a rumor, and I mean, the guy... I forget who broke it, but he had really good
Washington
sources.
Washington Post. Yeah. So it's almost certainly
true. Yeah, but what the Thunder were going to get back just doesn't make sense. Like, there had to be more in there that the Wizards were giving up to make it not worth it. But at the same point, I mean... You look at that, if that was that's a backcourt of Wall and Harden, that's a good start. Both young guys, that gives Wall a reason to stay. And really, you had the number one pick a few years ago, and you have done nothing to prove to him that this is a worthwhile place for him to make his career happen. There are many teams who would be happy to pay John Wall a lot of money.
Oh, John Wall, I'm getting out of D.C. as quick as I can.
Yeah, so moving on to the Western Conference now, let's switch over to the Southwest real quick. And you know, if you want to take that on,
absolutely. Wise, I've heard about this on the blog in the past couple of weeks. You know, this is a two team race. You got the San Antonio Spurs at 19-6, and the Memphis Grizzlies 2 games back at 15-6. Both teams are playing really well. San Antonio, we've seen the increased play of Tiago Splitter this year is really taking a lot of pressure off Duncan at the big man position. And Tim Duncan, I'm seeing the best I've seen Tim Duncan play in about 5 or 6 seasons right now. He looks mobile out there. He's actually hitting nice short jump shots at pretty regular pace. And his rebounding numbers are up. I think he's averaging about 10 rebounds a game this year. And his minutes are a little up as well. I think he's playing about 30. Yeah. But, of course, you know, San Antonio, they've been the same for a while. Of course, Tony Parker, Manu Ginobili, you know, that whole cast, Gary Neal scoring well. But the real story in this division is Memphis. The Grizzlies are got to be one of the most fun teams to watch in the NBA. You know, you have Conley continuing to improve a point guard, just really fun to watch on a daily basis. And then my boy Zebo inside, he's had double doubles I think in every game but 3 so far this year. Just an absolute joy to watch his ability to hit the offensive glass. Yeah. I just really want to take Jared Sellinger, put him in a room, and just show him videotape of Zach Randolph, because that's what he can be if he puts his mind to it and really works hard.
It's funny too, because when you watch Zach Randolph, and a lot of people have commented on this, I think his vertical is probably about 3 inches.
Oh, it's not.
But he gets certain offensive rebounds where he literally doesn't leave the floor. He's athletic in his upper body, and he can just move guys. He knows he's one of those guys like Kevin Love, who knows exactly where the ball is going to get off of the board. He just reads the angles really well, and he's really good at that.
He gets a lot of what I call man rebounds, where you use one arm to box a guy out, and use the other arm to grab a ball without even jumping.
And he's got incredibly soft hands. I mean, he gets tips around the rim with regularity, and it also helps he gets a playoff with Marc Gasol. I mean, you're playing off of this pretty athletic 7-footer who's able to get in the paint as well.
I love that picture that I've posted it a few times. It's them hanging out in the locker rooms. It's just like, if you had to pick two people who would never be friends outside of basketball, it's probably Marc Gasol and Zach Randolph. I mean, Marc Gasol, like the lovely romantic Spaniard, probably, and Zach Randolph, formerly a part of the Jailblazers. Like, just two very different people, and they seem to be having a great time playing together.
For me, if this team wants to make that jump, though, if they want to be a championship team, we have to see Rudy Gay take on the superstar level that he needs to take on.
And he does at times, but it hasn't been consistent.
Exactly.
And what's really hurt him, and he was pretty smart about it, was not making the Olympic team. Supposedly, he was the last cut, and they picked Harden over him. You know, Harden didn't really do much in the Olympics, not that we needed him, but... you know, I think that would have been a really good experience for Rudy Gay. Seemed to hurt his feelings a little bit. He wasn't too happy about it. But I think it could have been really helped him in terms of practicing with those guys every day. But it will come playoff time where we'll see what type of player he is. Because when you look at that team, he's still probably the guy that takes that last second shot. You're not going to see a post play in the last second. You're going to see an ISO for Rudy. And so he needs to work on that. And he's going to be locked down in those Western Conference players from guys like Thabo. Kobe probably guards him on the Lakers if they're playing the Lakers. Spurs, Danny Green is probably guarding him. So quick, fast defenders who can shut it down, like a guy like that. And, you know, he's improved his offensive game.
He needs
game,
to get to the bucket. Just flat out. He needs to get to the bucket. He's not an elite shooter. You know, he's just probably not going to be that elite shooter at any point in his career. But he is this athleticism. He's still young. I need to see him put his head down, get to the bucket, and draw fouls. I mean, he's shooting 4 free throws a game, which is lovely right now, but I need to see him up around 6, 6.5.
How about Houston, Dallas, and New Orleans?
Well, you know, Houston, obviously, you know, just a really fun team to watch again. They're up and down. They play this extremely fast style. And they have the two guards, Harden and Lynn, who are both really good players, but they both like to have the ball in their hands. And right now, obviously, only one of them can. So, you know, they're still working things out. Obviously, Kevin McHale was out, you know, with the death of his daughter. And that was obviously very difficult for the team to have to deal with. And now he's back, and I think hopefully the continuity that they'll have of having him around regularly should allow them to develop something offensively as well as defensively. But this team literally gets the ball, pushes up the floor, and then you're seeing Chandler Parsons actually this year really break out. He's turned himself into a nice player.
Quick side moment with that. Really kind of a cool and touching moment with McHale and Garnett. After the game on Friday night, Garnett was drafted by McHale, and McHale was the GM of the Timberwolves at that time. It was a really risky pick. Garnett was the first high school player taken in 20 years. And,
since Moses,
you know,
right?
Yeah. And so, you know, McHale took a huge chance on Garnett. And then when he was still the GM of the Timberwolves, he was the one who actually traded Garnett to the Celtics to give him a chance to win a title. You know, thank you for your time in Minnesota. Obviously, the two have a really good relationship. I think a lot of people online and on the blogs were a little shocked that, you know, Garnett has a heart. But just a really touching moment. You could tell just two guys who really care for each other. So a really cool moment.
After the tragedy with McHale's daughter.
Of course, yeah. And it wasn't just KG either. You know, Doc and him shared a long hug. Courtney Lee came over, and it was just great to see all of them.
But how about Dallas?
Dallas. You know, they're a team that is just trying to buy time until Dirk can come back. You know, they've got Darren Collison playing up and down all season. You know, he can get to the bucket, he can shoot from threes. But they really need that consistent player. You know, they like to run that high post game where they'll give the ball to their big man. Hopefully, it's Dirk. So far this season, it's been Chris Kaman, and he's going to turn and run off a pick from the point guard, who then might bounce outside for a three. Right now, Kamen's getting a lot of open shots, and he's making them. You know, Kamen's a good scorer. What they really need is they need Dirk back in this lineup, and it's really hard to even evaluate Dallas to this point. I mean, they have aging stars, Brandon Carter, but
RJ Mayo is looking to be a much better player than we ever thought. He got in the gym with Rick Carlisle over the summer, and they refined his shooting mechanics, and this has really helped him. He's now shooting his best percentage from three ever, and he's playing great ball, the best ball of his career, and this will really pay dividends once Dirk comes back, because they'll have another scorer to play off of Dirk, and I expect them to make a run if Dirk can come back and be the old Dirk.
Yeah, I think Dallas is still a team that, because there's so many veterans and so there's so many battle-tested veterans, that's a team that nobody in the West wants to see in the first round.
Nope.
Whether they're the 8 seed or the 1 seed, and they're kind of the Celtics of the East. They're just biding time until they have their full team. It's a group of veterans who know how to run a regular season. I'm saying this partly because of past and partly because I just want the Celtics to be good in the playoffs. But, it's just, they're just biding time. But
great news for Dallas fans, they're saying Dirk's coming back Christmas Day. I mean, yeah. When they played on ESPN the other day against the Celtics, they interviewed Dirk on the sidelines, and he said that right now his timetable hasn't come back 9 days from today at Christmas, and that's just music to the ears of Dallas fans.
And then really quickly, New Orleans.
Well, you know, this is a really young team. They're
the Pelicans.
The Pelicans. They're led by a player, in my opinion, who really, you know, doesn't deserve to be a starting NBA point guard, and that's Grievous Vasquez. You know, he's fifth in the NBA in assists right now, which is wonderful, but you watch him on the team and it's just not being run like an NBA team needs to. Austin Rivers, you know, just looks a little bit shell-shocked out there. He's not shooting at a high efficiency at all. And they need Anthony Davis healthy. You know, one, to fill those seats and get people in the crowd. And two, just because they just don't have the depth to put power forwards out there, centers out there, with a skill that Anthony Davis can provide.
And another big silver lining is no Eric Gordon. He hasn't played a game this year. And it doesn't seem like he wants to play a game this year. It's a lot of negative press around him just about not being tough enough. I mean, his coach pretty much called him out.
Apparently, he already wants out. Yeah. He already wants out. He just signed a new company. I mean, he obviously signed the offer sheet in Phoenix. They matched it, so he had to come back.
Yeah.
But now he wants out.
Do you think they try to move Ryan Anderson, who they got to a pretty good deal and is a really good player, but he just doesn't really fit in with Anthony Davis because they're both kind of fours. And Ryan Anderson last year was one of the better players in the league as far as offensive efficiency. But this year he's not doing it, and I feel like it's a lot because of the pieces around him aren't fitting as well.
Yeah, he's still shooting the ball well, and you know, they did sign him to that. I mean, it's a pretty good deal. It's a very tradable contract. I personally think they hold on to it for this year just because it's, you know, let's see what we have this year. They're not going to win a title this year, and I think they know that. So it's almost let's see what this core has. Let's not make any big moves that could jeopardize our future, because if they are making a trade, you know, they probably have to send someone along with Anderson, which is probably one of their young pieces, which I think they want to, you know, Aminu. Obviously, they're not trading Davis, but, you know, a guy like Austin Rivers, I think they still believe in him. He's at a bad start, I think, you know, but
he's shown flashes.
Yeah, he's shown flashes. And, you know, he played 1 year in college. But, you know, he's got a great dad, so I'm sure he'll work in the beginning of the offseason.
Good talk in the offseason.
Yeah, but let's move over to the Northwest, where we have the Red Hot Thunder, and then everyone else.
So the Thunder are the best team in the league. They're first in the NBA in scoring, record, point differential, points per 100 possession on offense, and second in effective field goal percentage on offense. They're third in effective field goal percentage on defense, too. So they're playing good offense and defense, putting it all together. Right now, the difference to me is Westbrook. He's taking his game to another level. He's increased his assist output by over 3 this year compared to last year. And more importantly, because I think assists might be a flawed statistic a little bit, that his team is scoring more efficiently. They're scoring almost 5 points more per 100 possession than last year, which is a huge difference.
Which is a huge number.
Yeah, I think he's the most criticized guy in the league, and he's taken it on the chin a couple times, but, I mean, he's still playing out of his mind, and it's people want him to be just as good as Durant, and he's not going to be, but he's still one of the top 15 players in the league. I mean, he was on the Olympic team for a reason.
What I really like about him on defense is that he went on the Olympic team and realized Coach Krzyzewski got under his skin and said, "You are so athletic that you can go in the backcourt and steal the ball from essentially any point guard just using your athleticism." And he's carried that over to the NBA this year, so he's become more of a complete player. And I feel like he's really the difference.
I think he often deserves the criticism he gets. I mean, I don't mean to be a naysayer for him. He's obviously is like a top, probably a top 10 player in the NBA potentially. Yeah. He just his offensive style of play can be can get under player's skin. You watch, he's got players like Kevin Durant on his team. I want to see Kevin Durant with the ball, and I honestly think Kevin Durant needs to be taking 4 or 5 shots more a game than Russell Westbrook.
Westbrook is doing, he kind of cut down on a lot of the pull-up jumpers that you never like to see, because you see Durant open and then he's going into a crowd and taking a contested pull-up jumper that isn't always the best, but he's cutting down on them, and you can't expect him to cut them completely out of his game immediately because they help him get to the hole off of that and keep the defender thinking. But like,
he's got swagger for days, we can say that.
Yeah, and Thunder are currently first in the league in scoring. I don't know if you said that, but with 105 points a game, I mean, that's great. And are only 11th in points allowed. So they're good on both sides of the ball this year. And like you said, that Martin trade is really working out. And Ibaka's making a huge jump, too. They've really, believed in him. So
yeah, with Martin, I think he might be a better fit than Harden right now. Because they average about the same points per game, and he plays about a minute less per game. But he's happy with his role. Harden was always looking to be the guy somewhere, so that now that he's really happy in Houston. But Martin always has been on bad teams for almost his entire career, and he's just happy to be a good bench player on a winner. And he's playing great. Ibaka has also improved his game. He's scoring more points, but not by shooting more shots. He's up to shooting percentage by almost 5%, which is a pretty big increase.
Ibaka's mid-range game now is excellent. I mean, he's playing pretty much like a better version of Horace Grant did for the Chicago Bulls. He's disruptive on defense. He's been a hit open jump shots. And most importantly, he makes the defense play defense on him.
Imagine Ibaka with Horace Grant's goggles.
That'd oh, my. We just recently got poked in the eye, I guess.
Sweet 90s throwback. But anyway, rest of the Northwest.
Minnesota right now is in disarray. They have had 80% of the players on their team miss games due to injuries. So even though Kevin Love has come out and said like he's frustrated with the team and with the direction, but I think this is more a byproduct of the team specifically this year being injured and him being frustrated now, as opposed to the general direction that, and he probably would have liked to get the 5-year extension instead of the 3-year extension he got. But they'll get better with the return of Rubio. Other players will get healthy, and they'll be a fan favorite because they can kick they can throw the whiteout on the court, which is very rare in the NBA.
And Pekovic right now is playing at an incredibly high level. I mean, this guy can dominate the interior part of the paint with a really soft touch around the basket. He might look like a brute, but I'll take him on my team any day.
Yeah, 21-9 last night, and he had 7 offensive rebounds. So, I mean, that's great. When you get 7 offensive rebounds from your center, especially on a team like that, who, you know, when they get hot, they can shoot the ball well with Fed and Rubio not so as much, but then obviously Love can shoot the 3-2. You have a guy like that, and that takes a lot off of Love, too. You know, the past few years, Love has been known for his rebounding, but when there's another guy on the team who can do that, he can set up his shot a little more.
They'll definitely need to see more from Derek Williams going forward if this team really wants to be good. He's been pretty disappointing.
I think he's not really a good fit there. I wouldn't be surprised if they tried to move him because I feel like he still has a high ceiling, but he kind of needs to be. Maybe with Rubio back, he'll look better, but I feel like he kind of needs to be in more of an up-tempo where he can use his athleticism, where now he's kind of more of a tweener who's just hanging out by the three-point line.
Where's that knockdown shooter we saw in college? He was shooting, I think, 60% from three-point land in college, and right now we're not seeing him do that at the pro level.
Yeah, definitely.
With Utah, the biggest question about them is, what are they? Are they a young team that needs to get better to push for a playoff, and should they trade Millsap and Jefferson is the question. And we're not going to be able to tell for probably a little bit of time whether they're good enough to be a fringe playoff team and whether they should keep Millsap and Jefferson or just let Cantor and Favors do their thing.
Cantor looks like a player. He looks like somebody who can be a real force inside, actually probably very similar to Pekovic.
Well, he's not having 5,000 calories a day anymore, so it's just his diet. One of the funniest guys on Twitter, too, but anyway.
Cantor? Really?
Yeah. Solid Twitter guy.
That surprises me.
Yeah, solid Instagram guy, too. So.
Well, I guess you can follow us on Pick and Pop Diaries, by the way. So if you're into the whole Twitter thing.
Yeah.
So the thing, Denver has been a really big disappointment to me this year. Last year they looked like a team that really was on the edge of greatness. They had extreme athleticism at every position, played very good defense. But then this summer they added Iguodala, so they got even better in that respect as far as athleticism and defense, but they just haven't been showing it this year. They're the same point that I was making earlier about Cleveland's young team and not being able to rotate and relying on individuals as opposed to team defense is the same deal with Denver. They're forcing a lot of turnovers, but they're giving up a lot of easy shots, and this shows in their defensive effective field goal percentage. What they need to do is I feel like as the year goes on, they'll become more cohesive a unit on defense and be able to use their athleticism to stop people, as opposed to now they're trying to go 5 individuals on defense and it's not really working out. They're giving up a lot of points, they're awful at defensive rebound. One of the worst teams in the league at defensive rebounding, and that shouldn't happen with their length and athleticism.
No, I mean, they're just not scoring the way that they need to be scoring. They're not hitting threes as a team. They're only shooting 33% from downtown. Danilo Gallinari, who's supposed to be that leading scorer for them, obviously he's not. They don't really have that superstar player, but he's supposed to be the guy who leads them in scoring, hopefully around 18, 19 a game, only averaging about 15.5 and shooting less than 40% from the field. That's just not going to cut it.
Yeah. So, and then real quick, Portland.
All you need to know about Portland is Damian Lillard. I'm a huge fan of this guy. He's the next in line of the great Oakland point guards from Gary Payton and Jason Kidd. He's stepping up, knocking shots down. His defense hasn't been great, but then again, he's a rookie. You can't expect rookies to come in and dominate defensively immediately.
Right now he's reminding me a lot of an early Dwayne Wade. I honestly see that. I know he's a point guard, not a shooting guard, but you see just the raw athleticism, and the one big difference between him and Wade that I've seen so far is shooting ability. Damian Lillard's a good shooter. You can't leave him open from downtown, and he gets in the lane very effectively.
Shooting 36% from 3, which is a great number for a rookie.
It really is. Definitely rookie of the year so far. I don't think that would be in question.
Wade is a much better complainer on the floor, though, so Lillard is going to have to pick up that complaining if he wants to fill in that Wade Wayne comparison.
The thing about Lillard is he did a great move over the summer is he put out a line of YouTube videos that showed him working out, so that now he's built up his fan base, and me as a basketball fan, I watch the games and I know no one is going to outwork him after watching the videos of him working out. His work ethic is second to none, and I expect big things from him in the future.
Very Kobe-like feel for him. Just kind of that killer instinct is already in him. From day one, he felt as though he had to prove, you know, coming from Weber State, obviously not a major school. And he said that in that first video, you know, when I showed up for draft camp, you know, people saw my skills, but they said, yeah, you put on 30 guys, you know, playing alongside Weber State. You know, you didn't go to a big school. And I think he's proven that he definitely belongs. But moving on to the Pacific, and this is a division where we could talk for
it's a great division.
For 30 seconds. We could talk about it for 3 hours. So we're gonna try to keep it cut down here. But, you know, the big story is obviously the Lakers' struggles, and we'll get to that in a couple minutes. But the other team in L.A., the L.A. Clippers, currently winners of 9 straight. I mean, they are just playing lights-out basketball. This team is just so much fun to watch. Basketball Jones calls their second line the Chip Clip, and their second line is really what has made them so exciting. Jamal Crawford has come in, and after having a really bad year, kind of funny, he said, this is the first year I actually worked on my game. I didn't just play 5-on-5. I mean, he's still got that streetball mentality. And I think he has said that this is the first team where he's just been able to go out on the court and they say, you know, do what you do to Jamal. And I think Del Negro has gotten a lot of criticism in the past for being that type of coach. But this is the perfect team to do that with and let them kind of be free. You have guys like Jordan and Griffin who play off of that type of energy. That's when they play better, when they're playing in that type of energy-filled team. And a guy like Chris Paul to reel it all in. And I think a very underrated storyline here is Chauncey Billups coming back. Well, the stats may not show it. What he's doing in a veteran leadership role there is going to be huge for them.
Grant Hill, too, is coming back.
Yeah, I mean, Grant Hill, one of my favorite players growing up. It's going to be interesting how they fit him in. Is who loses minutes? I think Willie Green's going to be the fall guy here. I don't see him starting anymore, but it's going to be interesting whether they start Crawford, whether they start a Billups-Paul backcourt, whether Bledsoe gets more minutes. Eric Bledsoe, you know, we can talk about him for days and the improvement he's made. There are certain points where he'll run off stretches where he'll be in charge and he will be responsible for their next 10 to 12 points, whether it's assisting on the play or scoring. I know there was a point in their game against Chicago where it was mid-fourth, where the 8 points where they stretched a 2-point lead to a 10-point lead, where he scored 6 of them and assisted on the other on a lob to Blake. Griffin has got a little bit of flack because he's getting into the zone where he hasn't really improved since that first year, since his first rookie year. But he's still Blake Griffin. Yeah. And when you have guys around him that have made huge jumps, DeAndre Jordan's made a jump, Chris Paul is Chris Paul.
Eric Bledsoe.
Eric Bledsoe has been playing well. And I think another big underrated thing is signing Matt Barnes. Matt Barnes has done everything they've asked him to be. I mean, this guy has been on, 50 NBA teams at this point in his career. He's becoming the new Drew Gooden, where he's on a new different team. And we'll talk about the Lakers in a bit. I think that's another very underrated story.
How about Del Negro? It's like everyone kills this guy and says he is a terrible coach. But look, he is the way his team is performing right now. He is a dark horse coach of the year candidate that people don't realize. He's doing an excellent job, and it's great that he's proving all the critics, including me, wrong. So.
Yeah, really quick, Golden State, I'm going to write about this later this week, so you can check it up on the blog, but these guys have won 5 in a row on the road.
So much fun to watch, too.
Yeah. They lose at Miami on Friday, come right back, and get a big win last night in Atlanta. This road stretch that they went on was going to be the defining moment of their season, and while some of those wins weren't against, you know, the best of competition, obviously they beat the Wizards and the Bobcats and the Pistons in that stretch. But a big win at Brooklyn, big win at Atlanta, and then obviously the win over Miami really just showed. And a guy like Draymond Green getting the winning bucket, it shows a true team element. Mark Jackson said after last season, we have a great offensive team. We just need to learn how to play defense together. And that's starting to come together. And they're doing it without Andrew Bogut. Bogut was supposed to be their franchise center. He was supposed to be a guy that they built that defense around. Bogut obviously brings up a lot of space in that paint, and it makes teams have to adjust, and they've had to adjust from having that. And they have that guy, and then they also have Richard Jefferson, who's not even playing right now and was supposed to be one of the big part, and all these young guys are stepping up. Klay Thompson, after having a rocky start, has really picked it up. Steph Curry, as long as his ankles stay healthy, is turning himself into one of the better
players. And I can't say enough right now about David Lee. His play over the last, you know, 2 or 3 weeks has been incredible. I think over the last 5 games, he's averaging 23 and 13 or 23 and 14.
Yeah.
Just absolutely hitting the boards hard. He can score, you know, a variety of ways, jumpers, inside. And, you know, him is kind of the rock on offense. Allows Curry and Klay Thompson to really sit in that perimeter and do what they do best and knock down threes. Yeah.
Because they had been so bad for an extended period of time, people forgot the talent that was on that team because Curry was hurt almost every year. But this is a very talented team, and now they have all the pieces healthy, and they're really looking good.
Yeah, I'll quickly, we'll skip over the Lakers for a second because I don't really want to talk about the Phoenix Suns. I've talked about it before. They're boring to watch. If you want to watch Jared Dudley shoot up threes, Shannon Brown try to think he's Kobe Bryant.
I want to shoot
And Goran Dragic, you know, pretend that he's Steve Nash. Watch the Phoenix Suns. Michael Beasley's also on that team. So, yeah, that's pretty much the Phoenix
Suns.
They're already
regretting that contract. They're talking about trying to move him because he is a locker room cancer. And it's like, really? That surprised you?
Yeah,
you own a multi-million dollar team and you can't look into one of your employees that you hired and you're surprised by him mouthing off.
Yeah.
It's terrible.
And then Sacramento, of course, they're kind of in a position where they need, kind of like the Bobcats, they're a little better than the Bobcats, but they need to make a decision on who their core is. They need to decide almost whether we're going to go forward with Cousins or whether we're going to go forward with Evans. It looks like they're leaning toward Cousins.
They got
obviously,
no Cousins.
Yeah, but that could be a rocky road with his history. But let's talk Lakers. I mean, everyone's talked about it. And so I did some research, and I think a lot of people are taking Kobe as the fall guy. One of the most popular stats around right now is that they're currently 1-10 when he scores 30 or more. That was before this weekend. I'm not sure what it is now. Kobe is not the fall guy. Kobe currently has career, or not career highs, but in the past 7 years, he has highs in points, three-pointers, three-point field goal percentage, and free throw percentage. And they're saying he's taking too many shots. Kobe is actually taking the least amount of shots he's taken in the last 7 years. He's taken about 19 a game. In those previous 6 years, he was averaging around 23 to 24. What is killing them is their turnovers. And that plays into not having a real point guard. They're currently 29th in turnover differential. They are 29th in giving up their own turnovers, and they're only 28th in forcing turnovers. That plays into just not having a point guard. What scares me about this team is they're saying Steve Nash is going to fix everything. Steve Nash is going to fix everything. Steve Nash will make the offense better, but their problem isn't the offense. They're scoring 100 points almost every game. They are just getting burnt by these guys that have no business burning them. And you watch it. When you go in, there's no stats that show this, but I wish there was, on guys that don't provide help defense or guys that don't fight through a pick. I wish there was some stat genius that could just, you know, have the non-fight pick stat, because the Lakers would lead the league in that. They're just lazy. And Jody Meeks was supposed to come in and be a quality bench scorer. He has been so hot and cold. And then everyone said it, so I'm not going to harp on it, but Dwight's just not 100% healthy. And it's obvious he's not himself. And I think he's starting to realize that, oh my God, playing with Kobe isn't as much fun as I thought it would be. Kobe is expecting a lot from me. And Kobe said that to him. And I think Dwight may be falling into that person that he's falling into, kind of that, as much as he's going to hate this comparison, the Shaq role, where he likes to have fun. And he doesn't want to win as much as he wants to have fun. And he needs to make a decision. It's going to be interesting. You can't really judge a team until Nash comes back. And one thing I thought about, too, is the past 10 games, they missed two out of their best four players in Pau Gasol, as bad as he's been playing, and Steve Nash. If you take two out of the best four players off any other team in basketball, they're playing just as bad. If you take Dwayne Wade and Chris Bosh off of the Heat, all of a sudden the Miami Heat are the Cavs from 2007 when it's LeBron and a bunch of role players. If you take Rondo and Pierce off of the Celtics, then what are the Celtics? You know, if you do that with any other team, if you take Martin and Westbrook, then it's just Durant and Ibaka and a bunch of other guys. So that's what the Lakers are right now.
And they're going to continue to have defensive issues playing Antoine Jameson 20-25 minutes a game. He's just, you know, at this point in his career, he's just not going to keep up with our NBA forwards.
Yeah.
I mean, it's pretty obvious that he's just getting burned.
To me, the problem is effort. You see a lot of, after the turnovers, is someone chasing down the guy on a break? Absolutely not. They're just watching him. And I don't know what, I feel like that's kind of a locker room issue, because you can't, basketball players are, if you've been playing your entire life, you know that you need to try to win. And the only time you don't actually try is when you're frustrated with either your teammates or what's going on in general. So I think this losing streak has really weighed on them. and it's causing them to, it's causing their effort to dip because they're down on themselves, which is really, really hurting the product, and it's making LA fans upset except for that guy who's taken off his glasses. He's still doing good.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The Laker bros. He's pretty awesome. So we won't talk about the Lakers too much more. But moving on, we're going to talk. So Ball Don't Lie is a segment that we thought up. First of all, we know we went a little long with the divisions, but with our third podcast, we wanted to get it all out there. But Ball Don't Lie is a segment we thought up. You know, obviously this phrase coined by our lovely Rasheed Wallace, a fan favorite for everyone. But basically it's a feel-good moment in the NBA when something's been righted, something we feel as though, you know, we're happy to see. Whether it's a call getting overturned or a player coming back or just a funny moment. So something, kind of the Ball Don't Lie, where we feel as though something has been righted in the NBA. So, Evan, if you want to kick it off.
So my moment is Jeremy Lin finally knocking down some shots. People have been killing him or just not caring about him because he's not in New York anymore. And he, with the improved playing next to Harden, he hasn't gotten the ball as much as he should. But he's shooting at a much lower percentage than he did last year. But this week, he started to pick it up. He had a game where he absolutely caught fire against San Antonio. And it's good to see. I feel like he's the Ball Don't Lie that Jeremy Lin is a good shooter.
Yeah, for me, my Ball Don't Lie moment of the week right now is Andre Bargnani admitting that his team is the worst in the NBA. And, you know, it's true. I mean, the Toronto Raptors are just a real joke right now. They're going to get run over in the Atlantic. They're going to get run over by any team they face in the Eastern Conference. Sands, of course, Washington, Charlotte, as those teams are also pretty bad. But, you know, really, you know, this team's shooting 42% from the field, 43% from the field, and it's just ugly to watch. Jose Calderon, low turnover point guard, but he also just doesn't get that offense going.
And then my Ball Don't Lie moment is the return of Ricky Rubio. I think just last night, that one pass, which I showed you guys, not only through his legs, but through the defender's legs to Greg Steenstra, who had the face of, oh, please don't let me screw this up. That was an amazing play. Obviously, finally put his backyard wrestling career behind him. And as he returned to the Timberwolves in 18 minutes last night, 8 points, 9 assists, 4 rebounds, 3 steals, and just 2 turnovers. Ridiculous numbers for the low amount that he played. When him and K-Love finally start playing together, now that they're both healthy, I think you're going to see a large jump in the Timberwolves kind of attitude in terms, and especially Kevin Love's attitude, but they're just going to really progress. But so good first Ball Don't Lie segment, guys. But as you know, the holidays are around, and it's time to give out some Christmas gifts. It's the most wonderful time of the year. So I'm feeling really giving this year, and one of my new favorite players in the league is Kyrie Irving. And he's been amazing when he's been on the floor. But after an injury in college, and now, you know, just got back from the broken finger, a broken hand, and now he just broke his jaw, and he was wearing a sweet mask last night. I don't know if you saw
it.
What with the black mask, he looked like Batman out there at times. it was awesome. But I'm going to give Kyrie Irving some stronger bones and some better team doctors. Because, as I just said earlier, one of my favorite players growing up was Grant Hill. And I think Grant Hill, unfortunately, his career is going to be defined as what could he have been. Was consistently in the top 10 in voting for MVP for 5 or 6 years when he was in Detroit, went to Orlando, and then, you know, saw his career go off the wayside with injuries. And I really don't want to see that happen to Irving, and I'm afraid he might be becoming one of those guys who is going to play 50 to 60 games a year because he's going to get these little nagging injuries and maybe even start getting more serious ones when he only plays 40. So my gift is Kyrie Irving getting some stronger bones because I want to see him out there making plays, and he just makes the Cavaliers so much more fun to watch.
That's very generous of you, Brent.
Yeah.
For my gift, I'm actually going to go along a bit of a health thing as well, but it's a two-part thing. It's for the New Orleans Hornets to either, one, get a point guard. I really want that team to do well. I feel pretty terrible for Anthony Davis. I mean, this guy is a winner in high school, winner in college. He's coming to the league, and he's in a bad situation. He has Eric Gordon not healthy, and, you know, he's playing with a point guard. Gervis Vasquez is just not an NBA-quality point guard. So right now he's not getting the NBA schooling that I think – starting point guard, yes. And, you know, I'd like to see him get the proper NBA schooling that he deserves to get to the winner. So my gifts would be for the New Orleans Hornets to have a better starting point guard and also for them to have the health that they need.
My gift, because I'm feel especially giving this year, so I'm going to give a gift to the Lakers, even though I hate the Lakers.
Wow.
Generous. I want to give them an energy guy, because right now their energy is down. They're not winning hustle plays. And energy is something on the basketball court that's infectious. So I want to give them Anderson Varejão at the trading deadline, because that's someone who would uprise the entire effort level of the team with his energy.
It's very giving of all of us, guys. I feel a lot better now. All right, so the next segment we're going to do is called Instant Argument. Now, what this is Evan and Andy have been friends for a while, and as most friends like to do, they like to disagree with each other. So basically what I'm going to do every week is come out with three questions. They have not heard these questions. They know nothing about them. Maybe know the theme. They know the theme of the first one. And then I'm just going to let them go at it for a couple minutes, and then I'm going to decide a winner. And we're going to keep a weekly tally here and decide at the end of the season who is the winner of Instant Argument. So are you guys ready for round one of Instant Argument?
Sir. Absolutely. Right.
So one of the biggest things on ESPN.com this week that was talked about was Hall of Fame discussions. And 5-on-5 talked about it. They talked about a bunch of players that are right on the cusp, whether because of their attitudes, their personalities, whether they won a title, whether they didn't win a title. So, better chance at making the Hall of Fame, Vince Carter or Tracy McGrady? And if you think both of them are going to make it, who's more deserving?
Sure. I guess I can take this one. Wow, good question. Right now, I'm going to have to go with Vince Carter. And for me, it's the longevity purpose. Vince has had a career riddled by injuries. So, I mean, that's been something that's going to keep his career statistics, like his overall scoring, a little bit down. But Vince Carter really revolutionized at least modern dunking. He opened the way, which I know is not something we can put in, quantifying statistics, but what Vince Carter did for Toronto is he allowed that franchise to really be put on the map. And then wherever he's gone, he's been successful. He was great with New Jersey early on in his career. The funny thing with both of them is both of them are not the most efficient of scorers. But, right now, I believe that Vince Carter is probably the man more deserving to be in the Hall of Fame.
I mean, I don't think either of them really deserve to be in the Hall of Fame, but I think Tracy McGrady probably deserves to be in it more just because he led the league in scoring more times than Vince Carter did, and I don't know. I just feel bad for him.
And they're cousins. They're third cousins.
As much as I have to agree with Evan on the leading the league in scoring, I think dunking actually is a big part. When you look at, he did revolutionize dunking. That dunk at the Olympics, freakish 2000 Olympics, and then And so I'm going to give the point to Andy for the first one. So second discussion is. About two point guards came to the league same time. We're both drafted the same year. Actually, one right after the other. Chris Paul, Deron Williams. Who wins more titles? Go.
Chris Paul. Chris Paul is the better passer. He might not, like, the only statistic or the only way that I would take Deron Williams over Chris Paul is size and being able to guard multiple positions. But Chris Paul does a much better job involving all of his teammates. He puts up better shots, and he just, I mean, you just look at what teams have been better. Deron Williams has been on teams. He was on the Nets last year where they were just absolutely terrible. And Chris Paul has never had a season where he was on a team that he was healthy almost the entire year for, and they didn't make the playoffs.
Yeah, Brian, you managed to find something that we're both going to agree on. I'd take Chris Paul every single time over Deron Williams. Chris Paul, one, is on a better team than Deron Williams is. He's going to win championships. Not championships. That's just a fact. Chris Paul is a better player than Deron Williams, both defensively and offensively. He knows how to run a unit. I mean, Deron Williams definitely can probably create his own shot. He'd be a little bit better than Chris Paul at times. But, if I'm choosing a player, I want Chris Paul.
Yeah. I'll give it to Evan so that we can jump up. I'd have to say Chris Paul, too. I think they get compared a lot just because they came to the league together. I think a lot of barometers, when you put one guy up against another, you see that. And you look at the Olympics, who started? Chris Paul. We came off the bench.
He's just a better.
He's a more complete player. So this is my last one. This is the one I'm really excited about. As you guys know, I am a huge, huge Survivor fan. Season finale's tonight. Pumped for it. So if you had to pick one NBA player to win Survivor, who do you think, if you put a bunch of guys on an island, and who would win Survivor? What's the best NBA player fit to win Survivor? Whether it be strength, personality, go. I got my answer, and I'm really pumped about
Kobe.
It.
Kobe's a shark. Kobe would maybe have trouble with the alliance making on the show, but he would have no problem stabbing everyone on the back and stepping on faces in order to win. And I feel like he just He's the win by any means necessary type guy that tends to do well in Survivor.
Well, I mean, that's a great choice. I'm going to have to go to Kobe's teammate, Ron Artest, Meta World Peace. and the reason I'm going is because Ron Artest, whatever, Meta, he's the craziest motherfucker in the league. I would not be surprised if he would kill other players depending on what's up for stakes. He would eat. I literally think anything. I would see Ron Artest surviving off of, like, garbage he finds on, like, washes ashore in a Survivor. And, you know, we've seen his fighting skills. He throws a pretty good punch. And, you
pretty
know,
good elbow. And back elbow.
Pretty good elbow.
That was an accident.
We've seen him be pretty sneaky, too. You know, pulling down Paul Pierce's shorts, you know, in the playoffs. He can do some things that might undermine Kobe. Both strong candidates. But, come on. No one wants to mess with Ron Artest.
All right. So, first of all, completely going to blow up both of your points. Kobe definitely does win, because who's voting for him on the jury? He's just going to piss off everyone. I mean, if you had to bring back, I mean, obviously, like, certain guys that he played with are definitely not voting for him. Ron Artest, they probably see how crazy he is. He gets voted out first week. The winner of NBA Survivor is Derek Fisher. Derek Fisher, in every situation he has been put on, has become, like, the mayor. I mean, you're already seeing it in Dallas. Everyone loves him. He can convince everybody to do things. He's such a good, like, point guard. He's not the best, so, like, people aren't going to, you know, seek him out and be like, we need to get that guy off the island right now because he's a threat. Like, no one's going to look at Derek Fisher as a threat. He's not going to take all the big food. You know, he's like, yeah, I'll have a little rib of rice. I don't need a ton of rice. I'm a small guy. And then when it comes to jury time, you know, the guy's a smart guy. He was the president of the NBA. Yeah, Players Association. Absolutely. He can talk through negotiations. I'm going with Derek Fisher.
Give yourself a point.
Personally, I'd like to give myself a point.
So you're winning the game.
The other thing, though, is I think if you had to pick one of those two, who would go along with it? It would probably be Kobe, because he could convince the other guy. So I'm going to give it to Kobe. And week one goes to Evan. This is going to be something we do every week. But
I declare a tie. Yeah. The question too.
I mean, I would win because Derek Fisher's winning Survivor. Watch Survivor tonight, by the way. It's going to be great. My favorite, personally, is Malcolm. For anyone watching, the guy's just a freak, athletic freak. He's from Lubbock, Texas. He's a bartender, but he also teaches English to children in Sudan. Just a lovely guy. I think he deserves $1 million. But anyway,
apparently he's going to give Brian a large cut of it.
Yeah, hopefully. Yeah, Malcolm, if you're listening, you know, if you want to give some back, we'll have you on the podcast. real quick, let's just to wrap it up, kind of talk about the week ahead, going through some of the games. Point out for me in my divisions, Sacramento and Phoenix, two Pacific guys going at it on the 17th. Atlanta and Washington, maybe Washington can grab a win at home there in the 18th. Charlotte actually playing at the Lakers. The Lakers, I would love to see them lose to Charlotte because it would just, like, completely through the pile more. Another big game kind of crossing over into Evans is OKC versus Atlanta on the 19th. I think that's a good road test for the Thunder. Atlanta's playing pretty well. And then the last one for me is the 20th. Finals rematch from a couple years ago, Miami versus Dallas. Unfortunately, it doesn't look like Dirk's going to be fully back. Looks like you said, Christmas Day, but still going to be a good matchup. How about you guys?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the most exciting weeks actually in the Atlantic and the Southwest, but the Atlantic does have the Subway Series coming on Wednesday the 19th. We got the Brooklyn Nets going to the Knicks. Their series, season series so far is 1-1. So who's going to get the upper hand?
That's the first
forward.
Game in the Garden too. Both of the games have been at the Barclays Center. Yep. So. Be interesting to see how they handle that crowd. We'll see how Brooklyn Nets travel. Their fans travel.
I think the Knicks fans are going to win that battle.
Yeah,
there.
Yeah, so.
And then tomorrow, Monday, the 17th, we have the Spurs at Oklahoma City. That's going to be one of the best matchups of this young NBA season so far. Two of the Western Conference powerhouses matching up.
Nice. And I know we stole some of your thunder there, Evan, but no pun intended there.
Man, nice.
Boom. We need a drum roll. But, yeah, Evan, how about you?
Well, my in-division games were kind of lacking, so I picked two inter-division games. I have Minnesota at Miami. Minnesota with Rubio coming back against the villains in Miami. And then we have Chicago at New York. And Chicago often plays New York tough, so I feel like this will be a big game. It'll be two very good defense and veteran teams against each other. Should be fun. I'm going to pick Chicago in an upset.
Rest of the Atlantic really needs Chicago to win.
Yeah, I like
for some team to start upset.
I like that game a lot because you got Chicago's D versus New York's offense. I think that's going to be fun to watch. But this wraps up the first episode of the Three-Man Weave. Obviously, we went a little long this week with our first one.
We're starting midway
through the year. We wanted to catch you up to a bunch of stuff. But we'll be doing these every Sunday. Feel free to let us know in the comments and what you want to see, what you want to hear, what you don't want to hear. You know, maybe you don't want Evan on the podcast anymore. We understand.
That's fair.
But, you know, just let us know. We're going to have some people come on later in the year, some guest spots. Just as a reminder, pickandpopdiaries.blogspot.com. Our Twitter is pickinpopdiaries, so pick N, the letter N, Pop Diaries. Follow us on there. We also have our individual Twitters you can get on our website. But definitely check out. We're going to have a bunch of stuff coming up this week. I'm going to be writing a piece about Golden State. We'll have some other stuff coming up. Obviously, our divisional roundups, our power rankings will be posted tomorrow morning. Feel free to let us know in the comments what you guys think. But as a little reminder, this week was brought to you by Dunkin' Donuts. That all helped us get over our hangovers this week on the drive over here. And Andy really needed the Dunkin' Donuts. So we're going to give this sponsor out to Dunkin' Donuts this week. But thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next week.
Over.